Senator Cohen possibly was discussed.
I'm not watching him.
You're not keeping track of him?
I'm not watching on the.
You don't, you're not
watch.
On the.
But there was on Murdy Watch all day.
Fresh out of that. That's delightful.
You have more work to do, though? Yes.
The Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans will be in order. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2011. Thank you to everyone who testified, by the way, yesterday. Today we'll be taking up amendments and having a final vote. Members may be in and out. I think all the other committees are through. And I just want to let everyone know, thank you for the half-hour patience, but I think Senator Dibble and Gazelka and Lilly will attest it's important to make sure that what was going on in transportation got thoroughly gone through, and it's an important part of the infrastructure of this state, and so I thank you for the half-hour delay. Of note, we had originally identified Senate File 604 as a vehicle bill. However, tonight we'll be creating a committee bill. That process will send the document to the reviser instead of our already busy engrossing office. And the reviser will prepare it in just like a bill draft. I will then introduce the omnibus bill on behalf of the State Government Innovation and Veterans Committee tomorrow morning. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members, I move that Articles 1 and 3 of the SCS 060-4A2 amendment, as amended, be adopted for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Senator Thompson moves that Articles 1 and 3 of the SCS 060-4A2 amendment, as amended, be adopted for inclusion in the omnibus bill. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. We're going to start with some technical amendments. The A18, Senator Daley.
I move the A18.
Senator Daley, on the A18 amendment, could we pass that out, please? Mr. Bodder.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is just some recommendations from staff on some technical corrections that need to be made in the bill. Basically, on the amendment, the language that's deleted on page 4 is just some extraneous headers for the Department of Administration. The language you see being amended on page 6 simply conforms the appropriation
Mr.
with what
Chair,
is...
Mr. Chair,
Senator Thompson.
Could we ask Mr. Bodder to wait until the... door gets closed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good.
Proceed, Mr. Bodden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the changes shown on the amendment that would occur on page 6 simply correct a rider to conform with what is shown on Mr. Lundin's spreadsheet. And then on page, the amendment to page 11 simply corrects the reference to a department. On page 14, the amendment that you see there is to... the section in the bill that captures the savings or that deals with the savings that occur in the bill. And what this does is make clear that if there are reductions made, those reductions would remain in the agency-based budgets. In other words, it'd have a continuing effect. And it also includes a reporting requirement if action is taken under that section. And then at the very bottom, the changes on pages 40 and 41 simply supply deadlines for the RFP process for the – I believe that's let me see. That's the State Employee Group Insurance Plan Dependent Audit. And that's pretty much it for the changes in the technical amendment.
Any questions? Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to find the bill that we're working off of now. The number at the top.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, we're working off the you can just look in the upper right corner. It's the A2 document. That's the bill. That's the omnibus bill. And the A18 amendment amends that document.
Senator Dibble.
I found a fresh one in my packet. So, Senator,
okay.
Goodwin, did you
Thank
look in your
you.
Folder?
Yep, I got it. Thanks.
Okay.
Any further questions? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this RFP will have to be done in a month because we will be, it's July 1st of 2011. So this legislation will become law end of May, and by July 1st they will have to have.
Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres Ray, the department would have to issue the RFP by July 1st, and then the contract under the RFP wouldn't have to be entered into until September 1st. So they'd have approximately, assuming this becomes law before the end of the regular session, somewhat more than a month to prepare the RFP.
About 30 days, a little bit over 30 days to prepare the RFP. Seems like a very short period of time.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think perhaps they could get started on it now and be ready.
Any other questions?
Nothing else to do.
Seeing no further questions on the A18 amendment from Senator Daley, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
No.
No.
Amendment prevails. We have an A13 amendment. Senator Lilly.
Yes, this is a technical amendment. This is being handed out, Mr. Chair. Is this being handed out?
Yes, it's being handed out, okay. Senator Lilly.
All right, this is a technical amendment. Perhaps Mr. Bodden could explain exactly what is there.
Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is the additional language that the Department of Revenue was discussing yesterday, and this relates to the offset agreement language. Currently, the bill has language in it that's in the debt collection chapter, and the department indicated to make this fully effective, they need the language that allows them to use the same authority with respect to tax obligations, I believe, in the tax code.
Any questions on the A13 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
No.
Amendment prevails. We have the A28 amendment. Senator Daley. Amendment is from Senator Limmer, who asked for some cleanup language regarding confidential information concerning Senate File 907, which, as you remember, was Senator Nelson's bill regarding tax analytics. Senator Daley moves the A28 amendment. Is there any further discussion, Mr. Bodden? Could you explain?
Mr. Chairman, the counsel for the Judiciary Committee, Kathy Pontius, was asked to look at the tax fraud prevention proposal, and there's some concern in there. If you go to page 43 of the bill, you'll see, or the A2 document, subdivision 3 deals with data confidentiality, and what this does is it clarifies that and makes it clearer that the data provided to the vendor must not include public data, and places the burden on the department to ensure that that is taken care of.
Any further questions?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. It must not include what is called under Chapter 13 not public data, which means private data and a couple other classes of data that are not that may not be released to the public.
All right. Any further questions, comments? On the A28 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. The A24 is on its way, and I think we're going to hand that out. Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. This is not a technical amendment. This is a substantive amendment. And this deals with page 35 of the A2 amendment, particularly dealing with the health savings accounts and the changes to the public employee health insurance program. And if you want to get into some of the technicalities of it, Mr. Bodden can certainly help with that. But in short, the primary operative provision is, members, when you get this A24 amendment, you'll see under number 3 that rather than the sole responsibility for premiums falling on the employee, that there is provision there for contribution from the employer, in particular $140 per month for an individual, $411 per month for a family. So in short, this simply alters that health savings account premium, and then there are some other small things as well. If there's anything substantive, Mr. Chair, that Mr. Bodden feels should be laid out for the members, you can go ahead, but that's the primary provision.
Mr. Bodden.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Thompson described the important substantive points in that amendment.
Okay. Any discussion on the A24 amendment? Senator Cohen. Well,
Mr. Chairman, relative to a spreadsheet then, are we still working from Chair Rex presented March 22nd? As if this amendment were to pass, can we... I assume that makes a change in the spreadsheet we're using. So,
thank you, Senator Cohen. We'll ask our fiscal analyst, Mr. Lundeen, to explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Cohen, we've already taken that into account in the spreadsheet. The numbers reflected this concept. We were just working with the department on the language. Okay. So it's $150 million in savings, which are reflected in the spreadsheet.
Okay,
so
Senator Cohen.
I'm sorry, am I looking at the right spreadsheet then?
I think so. If you look at the spreadsheet we had the other evening and look at the change items, it's line 134 on page 4 and line 146.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd just like to say, as a licensed insurance agent, I appreciate the fact that the language here was cleaned up to allow it to be qualified for a high deductible plan under federal and state rules. Prior to this, the language was such that the plan would not have been qualified and the HSA would not have been effective. The new language certainly cleans it up, makes it a qualified plan, and I think when I look at the deductibles, a $2,500 individual deductible and a $5,000 family deductible, I can tell you that with a $1,500 going into the HSA on an individual with a $2,500 deductible, that only leaves $1,000 out of pocket, and that's far cheaper than what most employees are going to be at this present time. I think this is a significant benefit to the employees of the state. Now, when I talk to a number of IFO people that are members of the IFO at the University of Bemidji, and I asked them about their plan, and they are part of an HSA high deductible plan, they said it's the best thing that ever happened to them. They now have thousands and thousands of dollars. Yeah, actually, in their case, they had tens of thousands of dollars already, but that was probably maybe a little unusual. But they had tens of thousands of dollars in an HSA plan that they are free to use as health care at any time in their life, tax-free. So I applaud this provision in the plan because of the significant benefit. Now, some people won't look at it that way at first, but I can absolutely guarantee that once they're on this plan for a few years, they're going to go, wow, I didn't realize what a benefit this was. So I just wanted to say thank you for cleaning up the language, and I think these amount, I honestly thought we were going to have a 5,000 individual and a 10,000 family the way this thing started out, and the way this has come around is just absolutely phenomenal. So thank you for the work on that.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like there still are $3,500 for an individual or $6,500 for a family. That's out-of-pocket expenses. 20% enrollee cost sharing thereafter until maximum out-of-pocket amounts to $3,500 for an individual or $6,500 for a family. Am I reading that wrong, Mr. Bodden? Is that accurate, that it still would be $3,500?
Maximum.
Maximum.
Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Bodden.
Senator Goodwin, I'm sorry I was engaged in another discussion. I didn't hear all of your
question.
Sorry.
Okay, I said under subdivision, under part 2 here, it still is $3,500 for an individual or $6,500 for a family. Those deductibles have to be reached before their the person is going to get health care. Correct?
100%. I can explain.
Let me explain
Senator
that.
Senator Gazelka.
Let me understand that.
If you had somebody that went into the hospital or any medical, the first $2,500 they have to pay out of their pocket. Above that, the state's going to pay 80%. They're going to pay 20% of the next $10,000. If you figure $10,000 times 20%, that gives you, $5,000. Because once you pay 20% of the next $5,000, you've paid another $1,000. And then above that, the state pays 100%, or the plan pays 100%.
Excuse me. Mr. Bodden?
Mr. Chairman, I'll try restating it another way. So using an individual as an example, the deductible is, everything's at the individual's expense up to a $2,500 amount. Going forward from that point, the individual pays 20% of costs up to an amount of $3,500. Everything beyond that would be covered by the plan. And for a family, for the family total, it would be $5,000, and then 20% cost sharing up to an amount of $6,500.
Correct. Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That still would mean that an individual would have to pay up to $3,500 out of pocket. It says maybe it's just the way I see it worded here, with 20% enrollee cost sharing thereafter until maximum out-of-pocket amounts to $3,500 for an individual or $6,500 for a family.
Mr. Chair.
The way that it's worded definitely sounds to me like that's still the out-of-pocket expense for individuals and families. Let's ask the insurance man, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
Okay. Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Goodwin. The way this is written, the first $2,500 for an individual would be right out of their pocket. But now what we have to keep in mind before we go any further is that the employer, being the state, puts $1,500 into their HSA account, and so that employee is eligible to withdraw that $1,500. So really, it's only the first $1,000 that would actually be out of the employee's pocket. And I don't want to go any further. So is that clear? I just want to make sure that. Okay. So then from there, if they're sick beyond that $2,500 hospital bill, let's call it a hospital bill. Then they pay 20% of the next $5,000, and the insurance that's procured by the state pays the 80%. So the maximum health insurance expense is $3,500, but we have to keep in mind that the employer is putting $1,500 into the health savings account. So literally, the maximum out-of-pocket for an employee would only be $2,000 because of the $1,500 that goes into the health savings account that they'll have access to. I think most health insurance plans that I'm aware of, and I'm not sure about the state plan, there's usually a $3,000 to $4,000 maximum out-of-pocket. This would probably be a significant reduction in maximum out-of-pocket to the employee. Plus, if they never get sick, they get to keep rolling the $1,500 over and over and over and over again. And so it truly is a significant benefit.
But, Mr. Chair, I've not been finished yet.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then on the $150 million savings, maybe Mr. Bodden can answer this question for me. What amount of that would be savings based on the employee's current insurance payment and the employer's current insurance payment? So what I'm asking is, how much of this $150 million savings is because the employee is getting less coverage toward their insurance?
Senator Goodwin, maybe I'll ask Mr. Morocco to come forward if he's here. Welcome, Mr. Morocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
State your name for the record.
My name is Nathan Morocco. I'm the director of the Employee Insurance Division at Minnesota Management and Budget.
Could you answer Senator Goodwin's question?
Sure. Essentially, the contributions that are applied to the employees amount to about 36% of the premium. I don't have a copy of the amendment, so I'm not sure. Is it a flat dollar amount? Is it $140?
Yes.
Okay. So the $140 going for individual coverage and the $411 represents roughly 36% of the premium needed for this kind of coverage, which means that obviously the employee then is paying the 64% of the remaining coverage.
Senator Chair, Goodwin.
Employee is paying 64%.
64% of the remaining premium. Yeah, if I apologize if I had a calculator, but yeah, so $140 represents 36% of the needed premium. So if you reverse that up, that should get you to what the needed premium would be.
Mr. Chair, what I'm trying to get at
here, Senator Goodwin,
and I'm not obviously asking the question right. I'm trying to get at how much of a cut this will be to state employees' salaries, because obviously they're going to be paying a much larger deductible than they are now. Plus, there's going to be a difference in the amount of their premium. I don't know if it's going to be more or less. That's what I'm trying to get at. With this premium, is it going to be more or less? And what will the average cost to an employee's salary, the cut to the employee's salary, be under this new plan? Can you answer that, basically?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Morocco, before you answer. So, Senator Goodwin, what I'm hearing you're asking, how much will the employee's premium increase? Because that will equate down to what comes out of their compensation. Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
Or,
Well, Mr. Chair, I want to know how much money the employee is going to lose under this new plan per year.
Well,
how much of their salary is going to be?
Understandably.
Let's say they have to pay the deductible, family deductible, and plus whatever the difference is in insurance. Is this insurance going to be how much more or how much less a month? On average than what they're currently.
So, Mr. Morocco, can you tell us how much in dollars will the employee's share increase from where it is right now?
Mr. Chair and Senator, I don't have the exact dollar amount. If you give me 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I could probably figure that out. If you want a rough sketch, you could take the total savings as a result of this change, which is roughly $150 million in the general fund dollars, plus $310 million in all other funds. If you combine those together, those would be expenses that typically would have been picked up by the employer. So if you want a very rough sketch, you could add those two numbers together, divide by 50,000 state employees, and that would be roughly the increased cost to employees. Now, keep in mind that it really depends on how you use the program. If you are a low utilizer of the program, it's probably going to be less than that rough estimate. If you have a lot of family members and are high utilizers, it's probably going to be higher. But that would, again, that's very, very rough. If you just take those total savings and divide by 50,000.
And I think, Mr. Morocco, that I also want to remind the committee that we cannot lose sight of the HSA. And that this is an account that can grow over time if it is not fully used. So I want to make sure we stay focused on that as well. Senator, were you done? Were you done, Senator Goodwin?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think maybe after this session, most all of our employees will need some mental health help that they're not going to get.
Senator
Chair,
Cohen.
I wanted to follow up. If we could ask Mr. Morocco, because I'm confused as well, to maybe if Senator Thompson would consider withdrawing his amendment for a few minutes, we could ask Mr. Morocco to do a little bit of work and to compare what's in the A24 amendment versus what presently happens with an employee, understanding that it's going to vary from person to person, family to family. And I don't know if you, again, how it's structured. But to have them come back and just give us a comparison based on the amendment, keep in mind your comment, Mr. Chairman, relative to the HSAs, so we can kind of see apples to apples, both with individual and family. And if we can give them a few minutes, maybe we'll have a simpler answer rather than going around in circles.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cohen, I would suggest that there's never going to be a way to compare apples to apples because on the one hand, you have a plan that strictly right now is a prepaid medical plan. It's not really an insurance plan. It's a prepaid medical plan that the state of Minnesota has. What we're talking about is going to a new kind of a model in which we encourage healthy behaviors and people stay healthy, and they have a significant savings in the case of some IFO members that I know of to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars in an account that belongs to them. So there's absolutely no way to do an apples-to-apples comparison. You have a totally different kind of a product in which there's a significant benefit to the employees, and for that significant benefit, they're going to pay a little cost.
Okay.
There's absolutely no way to do apples-to-apples in this.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Senator Carlson, I think I have a limited sense of that, but then I can throw in my hypotheticals. The person who tomorrow needs bypass surgery, what's going to happen with that person? Second, what about the family that has a child with some kind of chronic illness that needs ongoing treatment, possibly a yearly hospitalization for whatever purpose? And so I recognize that if you take a healthy person who continues healthy during the course of 12 months, maybe that's a pretty good deal for that person. If you take a person who has chronic health problems or the family has, again, my example of a child, maybe it's not such a good deal. So that's why I recognize, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, that it might be difficult and we're not going to stay here all night doing this. But that's why I wonder if Senator Thompson would consider withdrawing his amendment for a few minutes to at least let Mr. Morocco give us a bit of a sense on a comparative basis.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cohen, if you look at the amount of money that goes into a family, let's take your hypothetical of a family with a child that requires maximum care every year. What will happen is the employer is putting $2,500 into the family's HSA. The maximum out of pocket for the family is $6,500, which means if we subtract the $2,500 that the employer puts in the HSA, the maximum out of pocket for that family would only be $4,000, and right now I believe it's $6,000. Now, I might be wrong about that. Someone could double-check the current plan. But this is a significant saving to a family with chronic problems, or even if it's a one-time problem. You have a one-time problem in a year if it's an individual where they're going to pay $2,000 out of their pocket, where now they would pay $3,000. The next year they're healthy, they get to start saving their money again. And it's absolutely a win no matter how you look at it.
Well, Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Cohen.
Senator Carlson, I'm not disputing what you're suggesting, and I don't presume to either have an insurance background or an actuarial background. You know, that begs the question then, of course, that today we put $140 of the premium into the coverage, but of course if we have a deficit in the future, maybe we'll put $100, the monthly premium, into the account. So that's a separate issue. But that's why I appreciate, you know, your perspective. That's why I'm suggesting we take advantage of Mr. Morocco, who's sitting up there, who's been doing this for the state, and allow him to come back with some sense of it rather than go around in circles for an hour and a half. Maybe if we give him 10 minutes, we can just cut off a lot of time and listen to him.
I would make this. I would look at Senator Car. What's your name again? Senator Carlson as an expert witness, as an insurance man that does this for a living. But I understand what you're saying. I wanted to let Senator Olson, Heather, and Senator Wigger both wanted to say something, and then we'll take.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, you spoke of an incidence, the situation that there's high cost. My word, the high deductible plan, when you get to that point, they're the bigger beneficiaries because there's tens of thousands, maybe even up to 100,000 beyond that could be the cost in that year for that child or that person with a serious surgery. And is it capped?
No, there's no cap.
I mean, some of the things that we've had, like under our Minnesota Care, was capped at, 10,000 or something. And then you're beyond that, you're out of luck. This is, I realize this is an employee situation, but also going with HSA, you know, I don't know how far the plan goes in terms of this pre-tax benefit. Do all employees, and we have access to that, where we can try to estimate what we might incur in the next year and have it deducted from our checks and avoid the tax on it. But then we better guess right, otherwise we lose it. And so, you know, I'm trying to do that each year. We've got to take those things into consideration because there's just lots of stuff that's not even covered in our current plan.
Mr. Chairman. Let me go over to Senator Wigger here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Carlson, I believe you said this concept's been rolled out at Bemidji State.
This is what I was told, right. Yes.
And not only well-received, almost euphorically. And I'm wondering, you know, is there any other point of view on that, since that's on the record? Because that's great news if that's the case. But if there's anyone that has the Bemidji State perspective
Mr.
on that,
Stanton
just for balance.
Here. Mr. Stanton is
Excuse
here.
Excuse me, members.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Thompson, are you willing to help out Senator Cohen by withdrawing for 10, 15 minutes so Mr. Morocco can get his numbers put together to answer Senator Cohen?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think getting the information is fine. I will withdraw the 824 amendment with the intent to move it again after Mr. Morocco has been given an opportunity to get the data that the members are looking for.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Mr. Morocco, can you do that for us, please? Do you understand what Senator Cohen is looking for?
Mr. Chair, yes. What I will do is convert this into what the premiums would be in terms of a broader comparison to the senator's point. That can be very challenging, trying to compare one plan to another. I don't think I will do that in 20 minutes, but I can certainly convert these into premiums and then show you what we're currently paying under the CEGIP program.
Mr. Morocco, did you just give yourself an extra 10 minutes from the first time?
I think so.
That was smooth, yeah. Mr. Morocco. That was smooth, but I caught it.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say, I see Mr. Stanton over there shaking his head that about the Bemidji issue that they do not have. So maybe he would like to testify about the HSAs at Bemidji so we can be clear on that. And Senator Olson, I just want to say that you talked about a $10,000 limit. That's in Minnesota Care. That's not
that.
In state
I said
and place.
That.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest, why don't we, rather than keep on going around in circles, let's let Mr. Morocco spend whatever time. We've got lots of other work to do, not hours, but, you know, spend a few minutes, come back to us. We can ask Mr. Morocco questions. Then we want to talk about Bemidji or if this plan, because I think this kind of plan is already available for state employees, I think, but I'm not sure. And let's just do it all at once rather than go around in circles.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. Are there any other amendments? Thank you, Mr. Morocco. And when we see you come back with the sweat coming down from the figures, we'll call on you again. Thank you very much. Any other amendments? Senator Wigger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A6 amendment.
Senator Wigger has the A6 amendment.
So move. And members, if Mr. Chair, if I could start describing as it's distributed. This basically is Governor Dayton's proposal, and it includes the articles except for Article 2, which we adopted. And Article 2 essentially is in line with the recommendations for veterans and military affairs, and we applaud the committee's action there. However, the governor's proposal, I feel, provides a fair, balanced approach. It makes strategic investments in areas that will get us additional revenue. And I think a very good example is Explore Minnesota Tourism. Whether it's looking at Bemidji, at Paul Bunyan, bringing more people to the state, whether it's the program on Snowbank that we heard last night and what the impact it can have for additional revenue. The governor, in fact, would have put an additional $1 million in that program, and I think that's a smart strategic investment. There's efficiencies in government that we had a lot of testimony on. the results management initiative of the governor, I think, is the right direction to continue. There's in tourism, I mentioned, government efficiency, there's initiatives. And I believe on balance, it provides a thoughtful, creative way of addressing the budget crisis we're going through. The 5% on average reduction for agency is the right direction. I think making cuts in some cases of 100% to NPR, to public radio, other areas, it's not Minnesotan. It's going over the edge. And I am supporting this approach as fair, balanced, reasonable. The areas that we've had testimony, there's been a number of questions about fiscal notes in terms of how it's balanced in terms of the other budget that I'm seeking to replace, except for Article 2, and maybe there'll be more discussion on that. But I believe that the fiscal notes that are attached to the governor's budget are sound. The areas that were not slated for reduction have been well thought out, and it shows a lot of creativity in terms of making do with a crisis situation. And I want to point out the $16.2 million appropriation from Clean Water Legacy to assist local governments. Areas that, you know, for the Secretary of State that are being cut, or for the auditor, we're going to lose money. We're going to lose revenue if we go with the cuts that are being proposed. We're going to lose additional revenue if we go so far as to make the 15% plus cuts in revenue. I believe Acting Commissioner Salamone just sent a letter. Dan Salamone, I've known him for 20 years. He's not a grandstander or politician. He tells it like it is. And it's going to have a significant impact. I think he said $110 million or so could be lost in revenue and for just compliance initiatives. We have the ability, through existing efforts, to continue. And some of these efforts had been a part of the Pawlenty administration as well. And we've heard from Kent Allen and others about award-winning initiatives that have been made. So, Mr. Chair, I respectfully offer that. I think that we have the Article 2 and appreciate that, but would urge a yes vote on this proposal.
Thank you, Senator Wigger. Mr. Lundeen, where does this put us?
Mr. Chair, if you take a look at the spreadsheet, the budget recommendation change items, and if you look on page 5 under the governor's column, the net general fund spending, and this is if you're including the vets article in there for the governor, is about $873 million. And versus, you know, our bill, which basically it spends about $500 million more than what we're spending in your proposal.
Senator, any questions? I'll open it up.
And, Mr. Chair, I would request for the record a roll call.
A roll call has been requested and granted.
I would ask for it. Thank you.
Any discussion? All right. Before hearing no discussion, I'll make a couple of comments here. First of all, I think in the state that we are in, I just don't know how we can put the extra burden on the citizens. I think as I look at this, there is specifically what I have heard throughout the state is that our citizens don't want us to grow government. If I'm not mistaken, just under the revenue side of the governor's bill, he's looking at increasing the size of government by a minimum of, I believe, 82, 83 people.
auditors. Auditors that would be hired using $10 million to try to generate $40 million. When I think my proposal shows that through a partnership, a private government partnership, we would have no expense at looking for an opportunity to generate even greater returns without growing government, without an expense to the state until those funds would be found, if, in fact, that they are out there. And I guess both sides believe, the governor believes there's some out there, and so does the private sector. So, members, I do not support this amendment, the A6 amendment. Any further discussion? If not, Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman? Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Yep.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Being there are 8 no's and 5 yays, the amendment does not prevail.
You knew that one pretty quickly, apparently.
I did my own calculations.
He was ready.
Any other amendments? Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, I have the A21 amendment.
The A21 amendment, Senator Gazelka moves, and it's being passed out here. Senator Gazelka, on your A21 amendment.
Well, that's being handed out. This is related to public television. We think initially had 100% reduction. It's my opinion that that is too aggressive. I guess I see public television firsthand in the Brainerd, Bemidji area. I think Senator Carlson recognizes that as well. And certainly in our area, the only real local television news comes from that program. And so this basically makes it a 20% cut to public television rather than 100%.
Mr. Bodern, is there anything that you would like to say? Everything's...
Mr. Chairman, that describes the amendment. I think it speaks for itself pretty clearly as well.
Mr. Lundeen, how does this fit into our reaching our targets?
This will add a little over $2 million to the bottom line, and I think we're about $42 million over our target, so it takes about $2 million off of that, $2,084,000.
All right. Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Senator Gazelka for offering this amendment, although I would like the amount to be higher. I can tell you, for those of us in greater Minnesota, we don't have a private TV station that we can count on for local news. They have tried it in our area in the past, and they have failed because there isn't a big enough market. And so public TV in Brainerd, in Bemidji, and in the area that I live in and that my constituents live in depend on this public television for local news, local programming that we can't get any other way. And so I would like to encourage all members to vote for this amendment. I wish the amount could be a little higher, but I'm absolutely pleased that we have put public TV back in. Thank you.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Carlson, I'd like to help you. Give me a number. You'd like it higher? Tried to help you in the previous amendment. You have a suggestion?
Mr. Chair and Senator Wieger, I'm thrilled that we have something, so we'll let it go at that. And thank you, Senator Gazelka.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been involved with the public broadcasting issues for quite a while, and one of the reasons is exactly what Senators Gazelka and Carlson have indicated, that you don't provide some of this with public support, you know, you don't have the base in rural Minnesota in terms of, you know, foundation, commercial support for public broadcasting, for television broadcasting. So I support that. I'm going to join some of these big spenders over here and in voting for it. But I do want to inquire, Mr. Chairman, if I can, Mr. Lundin, because look, Mr. Lundin, you said that we're $42 million over or under target?
Mr. Lundin?
Under the target.
Okay. All right.
Senator Cohen, anything else?
No, I just...
Any other discussion? On the A21 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Any, Senator Olson.
I'd like to offer the A27 amendment.
Senator Olson offers the A27 amendment. Is that what it was? On that amendment, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's being passed out. I will explain. This restores to the Minnesota Public Radio $77,000 each year for grants for upgrades to the Minnesota's emergency alert and Amber Alert systems. This is a kind of an FCC. FCC.
Correct.
directive to all 50 states, and this increasing the backbone assures that all of our communities get directly connected into access to the emergency alert system, and it's the backbone of that Amber Alert. So I would appreciate that at the very least this might be restored.
Senator Olson, if I could ask, and I'm not sure, is this a matching, or this is what the FCC is actually saying, you know, you need to get this equipment to update?
It's, Mr. Chair, it's one of those cases where the feds expect you to do it, but they don't give you any money.
Okay. Imagine that. Any discussion? On the A27 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment, but I'm not sure what the number is.
A29. Senator Cohen moves the A29 amendment. It's being passed out at this time. Senator Cohen, on that amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I can speak to the amendment. I will characterize this as the Koch-Cohen amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for not – I'd hoped to get to you beforehand. I apologize. Were you in transportation? I looked for you and then got here a couple minutes late. I also want members to take a special note that my amendment costs less money than the two previous amendments. So I'm kind of the fiscal conservative on this thing. So what this does is Sarah Koch and I have been involved with the Minnesota Film and Television Board and recognize that there's been, I mean, you know, a tough budget under any circumstance. And I think possibly... Mr. Chairman, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I think with some of the cross jurisdictions between your committee and, say, as an example, the legacy committee of Senator Ingebrigtsen, there was no money appropriated for the rebate program, which has been a successful program. Ms. Winter spoke to that last night for those who were left, the executive director of the board. And this, to be honest, simply is for new members what we call a placeholder to allow the bill to get into conference to see what might be there or not there. It's a program, and I've been involved with it for quite a while. Sarah Koch has been highly supportive during and involved in the several years she's been in the Senate. It's produced jobs. You know, the only catch, Mr. Chairman, and again, I apologize if I'm going over stuff that was discussed last night, because I had to do some work back at the office, unfortunately. Previously, I think members are aware of a lot of the productions that have come into the state that have been done within the state. In the 90s, Minnesota had what was, I think, the fourth largest domestic production center in the country after, I think California was one, and there were four other states. I think we were the next third or fourth. what happens you got into the to the next decade is you had incentive programs become more larger and larger. Minnesota actually had the first incentive program ever from 1999, I think. But now we've been a little bit non-competitive. This at least allows the issue to get into conference with a small amount of money, see where things go, Mr. Chairman, see how you view it. But it's $100,000 to, again, keep the program alive.
Senator Cohen, is this match? Do they use this to get a match, or is this like enticement to bring people in?
Again, Ms. Winter testified last night that there is a match in the general fund appropriation that you have in the bill for the operations of the board. This is not done on a match basis, although by statute, although I believe the film board is securing additional monies as they can. And the way it works is that a production can get up to a certain amount of its production covered, depending on what's available through the program. And there's a fairly rigorous application process and a process to demonstrate what they're utilizing by way of Minnesota services, vendors, and personnel. And they have to go through that process, do the paperwork, then determine to be eligible for whatever appropriate percentage they would get. Again, up to whatever's available.
Any questions of Senator Cohen or of the A29? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, but Senator Koch represents the area now that I in part represented back in the 90s when there was a fair amount of film production going on, and Delano was the site of one of those, and I had a chance both to see how they used the local facilities there in production, as well as created a studio that absolutely you'd swear you were, you know, every down to the minute detail was a home there, including the view out the windows that were appropriate. And it was the film was kind of a bit gruesome, but it was called The Simple Plan. And it was one of the things that I learned in that process is that when you do have an active program, you develop a structure of the kind of employees that are needed to technical help for needed in that production, so that they are available rather than imported with the production company. So it does have a potential if it's done right to have a fair amount of job creation within the area, and it was impressive to see what could be done and what was done in that case. So I had that experience, and I think that this is a worthwhile investment.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
you know, probably at the risk of unwisely stepping in after that endorsement, but just to provide a little bit more elaboration. In the 90s, Minnesota had built up, by the time you got to the second half of the 90s, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson's comment relative to the Simple Plan, that was a major out-of-state production with some major talent involved.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton, Bill Paxton, I forget who else. And I think director was Sam Remy, I believe. I'm not sure. Mr. Chairman, there were upwards of 5,000 people working in the industry in Minnesota on almost a full-time basis, half of whom were union employees, half of whom were not. And as Mr. Chairman Senator Olson indicated, there were a lot of folks working here, staying here, living here. Now, that's disappeared because of the budget problems the states had, other states have had. If things improve in terms of our budget, if we can get this back going again, there might be the opportunity to recreate what Senator Olson describes. And that's a situation, last comment, Mr. Chairman, where you could create lots of jobs at a limited dollar amount, not quite overnight, but pretty close to that.
Thank you, Senator Cohen, and I think this will be money well spent.
All those in favor of the A-29 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment prevails. Further amendments? Senator Wigger.
Yes. Mr. Chair, and the final one I have is the A-19 amendment.
Senator Wigger moves the A-19 amendment. On that amendment while it's being passed out, Senator Wigger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this would reduce the size of the legislature for senators. We would be reduced by 11, for House members by 22. That would be effective for the 2012 election. And there is a fiscal note, and I believe it would save $3.1 million. We can talk about cutting on stamps and per diem if you want to really make a cut. I believe this would be about 16% in terms of the size. This would do it. I'll mention that it's been introduced something like this for at least 20 years. And most recently, well, I've introduced it often. It's never received a hearing over the years. And this year, Senator Olson, you've introduced it this year, too. And yes, and we have co-authors of Koch, Bach, Cohen, and Roebling, you know, titans of the Senate. And I'm not sure.
Excuse me?
No, but it's not moving. And here's some real money that can be saved. And there's not an impact where it's going to cost money, because this could be readily done as a part of the redistricting process. So it's rather direct, and if you want to reduce the size, here's your opportunity, and I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been granted. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if this is being offered in the proper committee, and I would question its germaneness. I would think that this belongs in either the elections committee or the redistricting committee, but I'm not understanding why that's being offered and considered here in this committee.
Mr. Bodern, can you?
Mr. Chair, I could respond, but go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, the State Government Committee does have the legislature under its jurisdiction, and I believe it was Senator Roebling's bill last year that was heard, and Senator Olson's, that was heard in the State Government Committee as the Committee of Primary Jurisdiction, first reference.
And Mr. Chair, it passed.
Senator Olson.
It passed three committees last year and was ready to be taken up on the floor.
Thank you, Senator Ortman.
The majority caucus decided not to allow that to happen.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, if we act on this amendment at this point and move this language into this bill, does that mean that then it must go to these other committees, since this would be its first consideration? Then we would be slowing this bill down for this language and then get it off track for reaching our timelines for our budget?
Senator Ortman, I would agree with you on that, because that's what I would like to have done. Senator Wigger, we've all talked about this. What's unfortunate and what just makes me just a little bit upset was the fact that Senator Olson brought it up last year. It passed through the committee. And the majority party last year would not even let us discuss it on the Senate floor. That upsets me. I'm not in favor of it, only because I want this to be re-vetted through the committee process, and I am sure that it would get a hearing on the Senate floor. But we don't have the I'm thinking of all the different people that testified last year. And so I can't support it tonight, but moving forward, I could see that by going through the committee process. Senator Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have reintroduced it and intend to pursue it, but at the right time and in the right way. I don't believe it belongs.
Senator.
I don't believe it belongs here, although it obviously ultimately will have a fiscal impact.
Right.
And I believe that it would send a very positive message that the legislature is willing to do more with less as well.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to state for the record, particularly since I've been characterized as a titan of the Senate, I'd like to get that on a plaque someday. But Senator Olson, I think every time your bill was heard where I was, I supported it.
Yes, I know you
so
did.
So this Senator particular Tom, Titan supported it.
Senator Wigger, with that information, I'm willing, if you want to withdraw it, otherwise we'll move forward on a vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm certain you're going to. On its next stop, there can be continued it can be jettisoned potentially, but it would be an opportunity to get attention to those chairs. This is very simple, and maps are being drawn. This would just make it a little easier, perhaps. So I'd prefer to send a strong message with the recognition that leadership, who's on this bill, might, if there's a will, there'll be a way.
All right. So
I'd like to see it at this point, and let's see. We're trying to help the leadership. Let's see if they want to walk the talk.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman had her hand up first. And
thank you. Senator Wigger, out of respect for the members that support this proposal, I would hope that you would withdraw your amendment at this time, out of respect for those that want to support this. But we can't support it at this time because it will divert a very key budget bill that must be considered on the Senate floor in order to meet our timelines. And so that puts us in a very difficult position. And so I would ask you as a courtesy and out of respect for all of us that you withdraw this amendment at this time. If we have to vote one way or the other, we'll vote, but I would appreciate that courtesy.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, if Senator Wigger isn't willing to do that, I would just suggest that the majority pass on this so that there isn't a majority vote passing the vote.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair. And I think this is appropriate, not only the appropriate committee for it, but it's also going to finance, which is, of course, another appropriate committee for it, being it's a budget cut. And I think a vote on this right now shows that. I don't know that why it needs to go to elections, because it's a statutory provision on how many members we have. It's not a constitutional issue. It's a statutory provision. So it's going to be going to this committee and another committee where it can be discussed even further. And I would just suggest that we vote on this now. We're voting on all kinds of cuts to state government in this bill. We should be voting on a cut to ourselves as well. We have the largest Senate in the United States. And I think it's definitely worth it to the people that we're looking at in this bill to cut, that we should look at ourselves first.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to say that I have sat through many, many committee meetings over the last few weeks, and I continue to hear the phrase, "We haven't fully vetted this." I can tell you, of all the things that have not been fully vetted, we have had testimony. This does not affect 67 senators and 134 representatives. It affects the millions of people in the state of Minnesota, and their voices need to be heard on whether they want less representation or the same representation. So let us have this out in the proper manner at the proper time, and this is not it. And I will tell you that I think I'm in favor of the idea, but not without the public having a chance to weigh in. I think this is the wrong time.
Thank you, Senator Carlson and Senator Gazelka.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say because of the geography of many of the rural agents, or agents, whatever. Well, those two.
Oops.
it all started with, I didn't say Mr. Chair, but senators. I mean, the fact of the matter is we're trying to reach our constituents, stay in touch with them, and the areas are already huge, but I don't know all the politics behind this, so I certainly would like more of a discussion.
Thank you. And again, I see at least five new senators who haven't been privy to what I was able to go through last year through the process of hearing it. So,
Mr. Chair, I would like to move to lay the A-19 on the table at this time.
Roll call.
Senator Ortman moves to lay the A-18 amendment.
19
on the table. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka? Sorry.
Yes.
He deserved that. Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Uyghur?
No.
On an 8-5 vote, the motion prevails. Any further amendments? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've given Mr. Morocco even more than 20 minutes. This ought to be a really clear number. So I would like to once again move the I got to have my glasses on. It's the age thing. 824. The 824 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Morocco?
He bailed.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there are no other amendments, I mean, the way this thing proceeds, we assume we're coming pretty close to a vote then.
Yes.
On the bill. Let me suggest this. If Senator Thompson might consider putting his amendment on hold for a couple more minutes, I know I have a couple comments about the bill. Rather than wait till the end of amendments, I could jump in now. And I don't know if other members want to speak to the substance of the bill in front of us. We have a pretty good idea of what the bill is going to look like. So if that would help, and if Senator Thompson might consider...
That's appropriate, Senator Cohen. Go ahead.
You know, you're totally destroying my reputation as being decisive. I'll withdraw the amendment.
Senator Thompson withdraws the amendment again. So, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so my concluding comments, and we've spoken about these issues, but in voting on the bill for a final time, I do want to reiterate some of the comments I've made earlier. And I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, two, three weeks ago, I asked about, some of the substantive budget hearings, and I still think we could have used a little bit more with some of the detail of the agency budgets, the line items within the agency budgets. And I recognize with I think your intent to maybe look at a zero-based budgeting approach, understanding the length of time that takes, that it sounds to me like we'll get the chance to do that. But I certainly stand corrected to the extent on some of these larger matters within the bill, we really have had significant conversations in this committee. So, I think people do have a pretty good sense. So, having suggested, I appreciate the length of time we've spent with some of these issues. I do need to look again, however, and I'll hook on to, Mr. Chairman, what you said just a few minutes ago relative to, the tax compliance piece, I believe, that we could take, there's a private vendor that if we could utilize a private vendor, maybe supplement what government's doing, et cetera, not grow government, but keep government to within a more reasonable size. And I'm not necessarily object to that concern. But, Mr. Chairman and members, I would repeat what I've talked about previously. We have, over the course of many, many years, predating myself, predating Senator Olson, have had a budget process that has worked well. And I'm not talking about that we would agree or on what level we should have the general fund at, what level we should have taxation at. But I think we've always been in agreement in terms of the numbers that have come in front of the finance committees, in terms of what we're working with. Do we book a number of $100? Do we book a number of $1,000? We've worked with fiscal notes, and we've done so over the years, irrespective of whom the governor is, whether it be Democratic Governor Perpich, Republican Governor Carlson, Independent Governor Ventura, Republican Governor Plenty, and now Democratic Governor Dayton. I have not heard members of either party object to the fiscal notes that we get in front of all of our committees, whether we're working on budget bills or other policy bills that might have a fiscal impact.
we certainly have had members who have arguably questioned a fiscal note. It's only appropriate for members to go back to the agency and say, did you give some thought to this calculation or whatever? Once in a while, you might see a revised fiscal note. That certainly is not uncommon. But I've never seen, over the years I've been here, the divergence between numbers placed on a spreadsheet in front of us in passage of a major finance bill and the information we got from the agencies involved. We had extensive testimony. I'm sorry, Senator Carlson, with apologies to yourself, because with your bill, which I think had certainly some merit, I think we were just kind of exhausted by that point and probably gave short shrift to your bill, unfortunately. But we certainly had a sense of the concept, had briefer testimony. But we have not seen the kind of fiscal note, whether promulgated by an agency, a private vendor, whatever, that's ever been utilized before in preparation of the budget. Senator Lilly, I think it was Senator Lilly's bill for the federal offset program. The fiscal note prepared by the agency showed a savings of approximately $4.3 million, not $36,600,000, as is booked in this bill. We had testimony, extensive testimony last night, as well as testimony previously from the affected agencies relative to state building efficiency, fleet management, tax fraud, Senate File 907. And what I think is particularly striking, Mr. Chairman, is the tax compliance part of the issue, because that's something where every governor and every legislature, and for those members who are new, I guess you can only take my word for this, have bent over backwards to secure those dollars. Most recently, of course, Governor Plenty, and what I'm about to say is not said with criticism, it's just an observation. Governor Plenty has embarked on a campaign for the presidency. I, for one, happen to think he's a very serious candidate. I have some involvement with national politics. I happen to know the folks involved with the president think he's a very serious candidate. And Governor Plenty is campaigning based upon he did not raise taxes. Well, you can bet, given the budget problems we've had over these last number of years, Governor Plenty secured every last single dollar he could in tax compliance from his Department of Revenue. And it in no way approached the kind of number that's booked here. And Governor Plenty has not been unique in that respect. Governor Dayton campaigned this past year on tax compliance issues. Given the deficit we have, you can bet Governor Dayton has tried to secure every last dollar of tax compliance. And it in no way comports with the number we have in front of us. The other testimony we had is that the agencies are basically doing this. Mr. Chairman, it's not to suggest that we can't learn from the private sector. But in this case, it becomes duplicative. What we did not hear at all in the discussion was, is one less expensive than the other? Are we reinventing the wheel? What do we gain if we have that combination? But certainly the testimony was that it in no way resulted in that number. And the last bill, of course, as I mentioned, Senator Carlson's bill, which we did not have the opportunity to spend as much time with, we did get a fiscal note, albeit late, yesterday, that showed, in fact, there was a small cost and no savings to be realized. And that's not to suggest that these proposals and ideas are not of merit, not to be considered, should not be considered. But for the purposes of securing a budget number, you simply can't come up with numbers out of thin air. The only budget number that I saw presented on Senate File 907, and I don't think there was a budget number presented on Senate File 908, but 907, Senator Nelson's witnesses had this handout, and they had some number based upon something else, and they did some extrapolation, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you've offered as a defense that we're not taking the number that we could. And I said somewhat facetiously there tonight, let's just make the number $3 billion, you know, what the heck, if we're going to just pick a number. But I do think it goes to the integrity of the finance process. I think it goes to our ability to agree on numbers. And a couple of weeks ago, I lapsed into kind of the good old days or whatever. So I'm going to do that once more. I thought it would be a great idea at one point, X number of years ago, to set up a legislative budget office. And I did so because I looked at the contrast between the OMB in Washington and the Congressional Budget Office in, at a federal level. And the CBO numbers were always more accurate in terms of economic and fiscal projections. And so I had this brilliant bill to set up a legislative budget office. And what I realized with some time spent on it, actually not that much time, before I came to the realization that it was, one, duplicative, two, pointless, and three, and most importantly, we had a budget and fiscal process that everybody of both parties had agreed to and respected and utilized and did so irrespective of, again, of whom was the governor, of whom was in the majority of the legislature, because as I mentioned the other night, during the period of time, not this year, but during the most recent period of time, when Republicans had the majority in the House from 1999 through 2007, and I conferred with several Republican legislators, and not, Representative Krinke, not anybody's idea of a big government politician or legislator, Representative McElroy, Representative Knobloch. And we always agreed on the numbers. And I might have agreed with Representative Krinke and everything he suggested, but we agreed on the numbers. This is absolutely a departure from what we have done consistently over the years. And that's why I suggest, when I talk about Governor Plenty, Republican legislature, that's why I suggest this has not been done with one party or the other having the upper hand. If we go down this road where we discard what we get from nonpartisan employees, not a partisan commissioner appointed by a Governor Dayton or a Governor Plenty, but if we go down the road where we ignore what we're hearing from these agencies and the preparation of fiscal notes, I don't care what the budget situation is going to be in the future, whether it be deficit, surplus, or in between, it's going to be a messy, messy, messy process with no appropriate resolution and only continued problems. And so now I'm sounding like, I'm not trying to sound like the titan of the Senate, whatever Senator Wicker said, but I do want to make the pitch, lastly, to the new members. I would include Senator Goodwin to the extent that she's a new member of the Senate, that, you know, to some extent, again, you can only take my word for it, but this has been the process we've used. It's the process that has worked. It's a process that has proceeded on a bipartisan basis. It does not suggest we cannot have significant differences of opinion about where we go, what we do, or what we ought to spend. But we need to work from realistic numbers. And, Mr. Chairman, I, for one, having now served on this committee for this session, believe you have worked very hard under very difficult circumstances to put together a difficult bill, and I applaud you for that. I think there's some policy issues in here that I disagree with, but that's the way the place works. And I don't fault you in any respect for advocating for your policy positions as represented by issues in the bill. And I'm not going to go through this, but Senator Goodwin, I've asked for some information on the healthcare savings account just to get some differences. I don't disagree with that number you have booked for that, and that's a very large number. Might disagree with the policy behind it, might disagree with what's attempted to be done. I don't disagree with the number you are trying to book. And that's why I emphasize these three numbers. I think it's just an unwise departure.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can't recount 30 years of Senate history. I'm still one of the young guys, even though I've been here for 8 years and may seem like one of the old guys. But in 1986, I was an intern. I was a student at McAllister College, and I interned for Representative Art Seberg from Mendota Heights. He was a great man, and I loved what he was doing. He was working on the Commerce Committee, and he was a great role model. But I have to say a lot has changed since 1986. I mean, since 1986, I mean, there were no computers in the Minnesota House or the Senate. There was no internet service, of course. We didn't have all the websites. There was no Facebook. There's no tweeting. I mean, so much has changed in the last 25 years, and we all have to expect that there is more change to come. And this may be one of those departures that maybe isn't easy for everybody, but I think it makes a lot of sense. There are other authorities, and I'm not sure that our agencies have a whole lot of experience in costing out the savings for turning things around and maybe looking at things differently with private sector assistance. And so that private-public partnership is a new kind of relationship. We're heading in a different direction. There are going to be some changes that maybe aren't as comfortable as we might like. But I think we need to continue to explore them. And I would say to Senator Cohen, these numbers are not without authority. There are authorities behind them. I think Senator Carlson, Senator Lilly, Senator Nelson, they've got authorities like Deloitte and Touche that are making these recommendations to us and costing these things out based on their previous experience in other states. So it's not that, like, there is no authority here. And we are trying to change. We're trying to maybe move things in a different direction, and that might be a little uncomfortable, but this may be one of those departures that we have to be willing to make in order to really change the focus of government.
Mr. Chairman, can I just, people have been very courteous listening to me. I just want to, for 30 seconds, I promise.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I don't disagree with what you've said, but what we had placed in front of us was nothing close to what you're suggesting. We had a sheet of paper, and so there well could be, I'm not against looking at different ways of doing things, nor of involving different kinds of vendors outside of our gang of folks within state government, but we weren't presented anything substantive the other night.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you. Since we're right, I see Mr. Morocco back there, but I want to kind of add this story. It won't take long, but I've been in the private sector most of my life, but I have had some experience in the public sector in the House. And I would say generally the private sector is far more nimble than the public sector. And I wanted to share just a brief story in general terms. In the insurance industry, a very large company got very comfortable with being the largest and the biggest, and they did things a certain way, and they wrote, you know, business, and they stayed at that level. And suddenly there was a small company that started growing in influence and power, and that small company had done something called predictive modeling, and where the large company had one rate for everybody, the small company had all kinds of slices of rates, and so what they ended up doing is writing the best business and leaving the worst business for that big company. So at first the big company did nothing. They said, well, you know, we'll figure it out, doing it the same way we've always been doing it. Well, they came to the point where they realized if they keep doing that, they're going to be out of business. And so in the end, they went all in predictive modeling to calculate rates, and they added analytics to determine what the customer wants for everything. And it was amazing how good they got. And I know for a fact that the federal government came and asked them, how do you do this predictive modeling for some of the security issues that the federal government wants to do? And so they learned, and they adapted. And I feel like we're right there where we're doing the best we can in the model we've been doing, but we're saying we think there's some better ways, and that's why we're trying to look outside of it. And we truly could save far more than we think we can.
All right, one more who's on my list before I bring Mr. Morocco back up here, and that was Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to speak to our new titan, Senator Cohen. And first of all, thank him for his years of service. As a new member, I think most people would agree that it's not very often I speak in committee. I listen, I try to absorb, and I try to learn. And I'm trying to follow the maximum of you're a freshman, keep your mouth shut. And I have done that for the most part, unless I felt like I either knew something in the field that was being discussed or had a particular point of view that hasn't been heard yet. And I can tell you from an experience that happened in our Environment and Natural Resources Committee just today, when we were talking about allowing volunteers to help the DNR work in wildlife management areas. And a fiscal note came back. And of course, I assumed that it meant that we were going to be saving money as a state, and I misread the fiscal note. I thought that by using these volunteers, we were going to be saving $122,000. And in fact, someone pointed out to me that, in fact, no, Senator Carlson, evidently I haven't been here long enough yet, that's a cost. And so a volunteer program to help the state of Minnesota was going to have a cost of $122,000, Senator Cohen. So I have to tell you, as a freshman, without the years of experience that you have, can you understand where my skepticism of the numbers would come from? I'll let go at that.
All right, thank you very much. Senator Thompson moves the A24 amendment. Mr. Morocco, would you come forward, please? Oh, sure. If you have a handout, please, could somebody help Mr. Morocco?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
We're waiting. I just wanted, because Senator Carlson once again made reference to this Titan. That came from Senator Wieger. He also referred, I think, to Senator Olson. So
thank you. Duly noted.
Would that be Titaness? I'm not sure. I was curious.
All right.
And Senator Ortman said junior Titan.
Okay. Let us, Mr. Morocco, you had a homework assignment that was well past overdue.
Yes.
You stretched us out 10 minutes. After you left, you stretched us out another 40, but that's okay. We're interested in hearing what you have to say in response to questions from Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my apologies. I had to wrestle my homework away from my dog. hopefully this is coming, has made its way around. I apologize for the crudeness of it. Let me just explain to you what I'm providing. First, let's start with the guy that has the numbers on it, not the one that looks like a plan design chart, but the one that has the premium numbers on it. I tried to X out all the parts that are not germane to this discussion. What you have here are the employee contributions under the existing plan, and you'll see that for
Ms. Morocco, yes. Senator Cohen,
are
you wondering which...
There should be two.
You're talking about the one that has the 2011 health plan's full employer contribution?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
At the top. All right. Yes. Thank you.
We don't have that.
Okay. I think it's coming around. I'll...
That's okay.
So one of the questions, Mr. Chair, thank you. So the question was, how does the plan compare? What I've provided to you is the current rate guide for the traditional plan that you're familiar with, which is the Minnesota Advantage Health Plan. You'll see under the employee section that currently the state contributes $447.28, and the employee pays zero. Carrying that across to family coverage, you will see that the state pays $1,185.14, and the employee is currently paying $130.20. This would be on a monthly basis. If we then convert the high deductible health plan premiums to include the 36% cost share ratio, you will have employees paying $237, where they would have paid zero, and the state will pay $133, where they were paying $447. And under the family plan, the employee will pay $646, where they had been paying $130, and the state will be paying $363, where the state had been paying $1,185. Okay, now this is premiums only, of course, so you have the plan design to factor in. But this is largely where the savings are coming in. Obviously, we have from a premium perspective, you've got an agreement where the employee is paying zero at the single coverage. So to have them now paying a percent of that premium, is there's going to be a jump there. The second sheet then is on the plan design side. What I circled for you there, and I won't go into too many details, this is sort of the apples and oranges discussion that we could have. But what I circled for you is just the typical plan design that state employees have today. So when you want to consider first dollar deductibles, out-of-pocket maxes, this cost level two is essentially what you have today. Very similar at the first level, which is where it says nothing. That's because we have 100% prevention paid under the current plan, and you also are through the legislation, also suggesting 100% prevention paid. Then our first dollar deductible of $140 for single, $200 in family, would compare to the proposed one, which I think was 35. The first dollar deductible of $2,500 for individual and $5,000 for family. And then if you go all the way down to the bottom, you can see that we have two out-of-pocket maxes, one for prescription drugs, one for medical. And I believe the out-of-pocket max is $3,500 for individual under the proposed plan and $6,500. This could easily, again, you could have a lot of discussion about how to compare these. I just wanted to just give you a snapshot of what we have so you could compare it to what is being proposed.
Thank you, Mr. Morocco. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But the HSAs don't have prescription drug coverage as well. Right, they don't.
Right. Yes.
They do have prescription drug coverage, the HSAs.
Senator Carlson?
I have not, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not, it's a Senator Goodwin, I have not seen the specific plan, and they can vary somewhat. Typically, they do provide a prescription drug coverage, but it's treated just like any other illness or injury. So that, in other words, if you break your arm and it costs $1,200, it's $1,200. It's in the first money's out of your pocket in a high deductible health plan. If you have a prescription drug that you take on a monthly basis, again, it's treated no different than if you'd had a broken arm or any other service that you would receive. And so it gets lumped in. There's not really a differentiation. Once you reach the deductible, you reach the deductible. So once you've reached the deductible, you're not penalized for having an ongoing prescription drug need. Once you've reached the deductible, it's paid 80% by the plan, 20% by the employee, up again to that maximum out of pocket. So there's a little bit difference in how prescription drugs are treated in that sense that there's no differentiation. It's treated like any other service that you would receive from the doctor or hospital. I hope that helps explain that.
Senator Goodwin?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, it doesn't, it doesn't. You said up to the maximum. You said up to the maximum. So does that mean that their drug benefit only is covered up to the maximum?
After that, 100%.
Senator
Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Goodwin. I apologize. I didn't. It's again, it's like any other service. So, again, once you reach the maximum, now your prescriptions are paid 100%, just like a new broken arm is paid 100%, just like a new tonsillectomy is paid 100%. Anything over the maximum out-of-pocket is paid 100%, whether it's a prescription drug, whether it's a sore throat, it doesn't really matter. So there's really, and again, some plans, it would depend on the specific plan. But
right. Ms. Morocco, do you want to weigh in on this? I think we should have you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our assumption was, as you described, that the medical portion and the prescription drug portion are both under this proposed coverage. So whether you consume $3,500 worth of drugs or $3,500 worth of medical professional services, it wouldn't really matter. It's all mixed together. And that is more typical of a high-deductible health plan kind of design.
So, Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, just want to make the point that a $646 premium per month for family coverage would be over $7,000 a year pay cut for employees with dependents. And in addition to that $7,000 a year pay cut, they would have
late night.
They would have the deductible as well. So that could be up to up to $14,000 a year pay cut if they had to meet that deductible, plus they had to pay the premium. So just so we have that clear, that it's still a pay cut.
Any further discussion on the A24 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been asked for and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Being there were eight yeses and five noes, amendment prevails. Final comments. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to just talk about an issue that for me is very disturbing, and I think it's being presented in a way that it's hard for me to be able to articulate quickly how important this is for me. I feel that the new senators and the freshman senators have some very intriguing ideas about doing some work with private companies and doing some efficient work, and Senator Ortman alluded to the fact that we need to do something like this. And I'm very intrigued by that. And I'm new, so I'm kind of, you know, this is my second term into a new wave, and I'm open to it. I want to see kind of how this is going to work. What is pretty confusing for me and very disturbing is to see in this budget these numbers. And this is what Senator Cohen, I think he's talking about history. So he's done it several times. I've done it in this committee. This is my first time. So to the freshman members, these numbers that are here in our, you know, in our budget, where we have $36 million, so $20 million in 12, $15 million in 13, $36 million, it goes up in the savings. These are ideas. These are things that we think we're going to be able to do. We're going to be able to save these money. And, Mr. Chair, you include these in the budget. These are not concepts that we're going to try to figure out if they actually produce these kind of savings. I really want to see this. I really do. I really want to make sure that we put in place some innovative strategies to save this money. Yet, what you did is that you budgeted these numbers. You said, done. We've saved this. My budget is balanced. I don't understand that, Mr. Chair. I don't understand how you can take an idea that we think is going to be, I think is going to be good. I would like you to test it. I really do. And I was waiting for this particular one on building efficiency. We never got a fiscal note on that building efficiency. And it just so happened that that's a $140 million idea. We're not talking here about an idea that's going to save us, that you put a budget for $150,000. This is a $150 million idea, and you balance that number. You actually said to me, voila, I have $150 million on this great idea that I just came up with. I'm shocked. I just really, and honestly, you know, when Senator, you talk about, you know, a fiscal note that you got, and you were questioning the number. I don't know how big that fiscal note was. I'm sorry, I was just kind of trying to find my numbers. But $150 million? I don't know how you can do that. In all honesty, I don't know how you can vote. And the freshman senators, I really don't know, in all honesty, how can you vote for a budget
that is $150 million short. You don't know if we're going to save that money. I mean, I really hope we do. I hope you understand what I'm saying. I really hope we do. But you already balanced your budget. That is like telling your family that somehow, you're going to do a magic thing, and you are going to get this infuse of dollars in your account somehow, and you want to spend it already. You just want to put it in your balance to take care of your bills. That's what you just did. That's telling your family that you want to take care of a major debt with money that somehow you had a great idea, and you're going to save that money, and you're going to pay for it. I really would like to hear how that happens. I really do. I'm very lost with that.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. Senator Ortman, I saw your hand up.
Mr. Chair, I'm surprised at the level of surprise, because this is what we do around here. It's what we're doing right now. We get projections of how much revenue we're going to have every biennium. There's no guarantee. We're not certain it's going to materialize. In fact, we just took another estimate of another $1.2 billion into our expected forecast, and we added it in to our budget planning. That's what we do around here all the time. We take projections. We base our budgets on them. We build our budgets around these projections. There's no guarantee. And in this last one, we said we're going to have all kinds of new capital gains transactions. Boy, that's an assumption, that we're going to have all those capital gains transactions, that folks are going to pay the tax, that it comes into the state of Minnesota, and then we have it available to spend. And we're going to spend that money right now. We do this every biennium with every supplemental budget. This is what we do. We base our work on projections.
Mr. Chairman.
To that, Senator Torres Ray.
Absolutely to that, because this is the chair of the tax committee.
Careful.
That's absolutely be very careful. Absolutely be very careful. Senator, as the chair of the tax committee, those projections are based on projected revenues based on taxes. This is an idea that we will save money. We're not talking about apples and apples here. No, this is a very different thing. These projections that you're talking about, this is revenue from taxes, taxpayers. Clearly, you will never have an exact number, right? We don't know. No. That's that, absolutely. But you do know that those numbers and those dollars are coming from somewhere, okay? Because there is an account. There are taxes that people pay, and they're coming to your account. Not an exact number. This one is an idea that you have. And I want to make absolutely sure that you understand. I am not opposed to the idea of implementing these things. Absolutely, we need to. What I think is absolutely, I don't really know how to describe it, you're telling me somehow that this money exists. Mm-hmm. This money does not exist. You cannot convince me that this money exists. This is an idea that may generate this revenue. And this is $150 million. This is not a game. This is not a little number. This is a huge number. And you balance your budget on that idea. This is a different thing. Tax revenue and idea is not the same thing. It absolutely isn't.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. Senator Goodwin had her hand up a long time ago.
Well, just to respond.
Oh, to Senator Torres Ray. All right.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres Ray, buildings remain, but people move. Think about that in the whole context of your
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair and members on this bill, I agree with Senator Cohen and Senator Torres Ray, but beyond what we're doing here, I've always heard that government should operate like a business from your party. Always. Government should operate like a business. Well, right now, with this kind of a budget, I see government operating like a business, but it probably is the bank and financial institutions that we've had to bail out. Because if we use this... these Candyland numbers, we're going to have a really difficult time finding something healthy to eat in Candyland. And I really think that this is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to say that we're gonna put all the pain on one group of people. One group of people. There's no shared pain in this bill, as so many others that are going through here. There's no, and there, I have to say I appreciate some of the changes that were made as a result of some of the, I'm sure some of the members that have a large number of public employees in their districts and are concerned about the economy of their districts and what some of these bills are going to do to the local economies, because they are going to have an impact on your local economies. Senator Carlson, they are going to have an impact on Senator Daley's economy. People in the metro area are a little luckier because we have a little more business here. But if this bill is formed like a business budget would be formed, then all I can say is there's a good reason why we have an economic problem right now, why so many large businesses have had to bail out. Because this is a bailout budget, and if we don't bail it out and straighten it out, we're going to be bailing it out again in 2 years. And the one thing I don't want to do here is come back to a structurally imbalanced budget for the 10th or 11th year the legislature has had a structurally imbalanced budget, because we're going to go through the same thing. And this is way too painful to go through for the entire state every 2 years.
Thank you, Senator Goodwin. Senator Thompson.
You know, there's an old saying that figures lie and liars figure. And statistics can be manipulated. There's no question about that. And if people are engaging in statistics in bad faith, they can make things appear different than they really are. I don't think that our state economist operates in bad faith. I think he operates in good faith. And as Senator Ortman correctly point out, he changed our budget projection here in the state, a few weeks ago, and to close up the deficit or gap approximately $1.2 billion, the majority of which would come from increased revenue rather than decreased costs. Now, to Senator Torres Ray's point, that's based upon a whole lot of assumptions. It's based upon a certain level of economic activity. It's based upon a certain type of economic activity. That's all impacted by the price of oil, which is impacted by what's going on in the Middle East. These are all highly complicated econometric equations, and they're estimates, and they're based on data, and people can question the data. Well, when you have an accounting firm or a financial services firm making estimates on savings, they're doing the same thing. They're engaging in a statistical analysis. And, for example, one thing that comes specifically to mind was one of the testifiers we had who said that based upon industry standards, what you'd normally expect to see, there would be roughly a 4 to 13, 14% savings if you engage in a certain kind of auditing behavior. And I believe that our numbers are based on something in between those two. Could we be a little high? Absolutely. Could it be a little low? Absolutely. The point is that all statistical estimates are our models, and we don't know what they're going to be. And the fact is, I understand, it's a little different to look at savings based upon auditing and so on, but there again, we have history, we have trend analysis, we have all kinds of equations that these people bring forth that can tell us that, just like Mr. Stinson relies upon when he makes the forecast for the state. So I would argue that nobody knows whether these estimates are right. The next forecast will yield a different result for Mr. Stinson. Doesn't mean his assumptions were bad. Doesn't mean he doesn't do his job well. We all believe he does. The deck chairs shift. It's the nature of estimating.
Thank you, Senator Thompson, Senator Lilly, and I think we're almost there.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the conversation, the challenging debate, and all of the testimony that we've had over these last few days talking about this subject. This truly is a very difficult, hard conversation. It's hard to talk about these issues that are affecting families and people who work for the state of Minnesota, who participate in this, who try to help us succeed. It's also hard for all of the other families in the state who don't have, so to speak,
someone that works for the state of Minnesota. These families are also facing tough situations. They are sharing the pain of what is happening in this economy. We are all faced with the same pain, and that is something we all share together, is what is happening in this economy. You know, these forecast numbers that we're talking about, I'm quite sure that when some of these numbers were figured, I believe that MMB was using $3 a gallon gas. When was the last time gas was $3 a gallon? We all make assumptions when we do budgeting, when we try to figure out a pro forma and look forward, whether we're in government or in families or in businesses. We all make projections and look forward to what those numbers are going to be. And sometimes they prove out to be true, and sometimes they don't. I'm sure that families that invested in brand-new houses over the last 10 years didn't foresee that the cost of those homes would come down as much as they have, and that would eat up their family savings. I'm sure that people did not expect unemployment to drop the way that, or to grow the way that it did, and jobs to drop the way that they have. And yet we made decisions based on the information that we had available to us. This is a hard conversation, but I do think that we've done our best to try to find a way to get to a number that will work. And this is not the last stop. We will continue to talk about this budget in other committees on the floor of the Senate, and I'm sure the governor will have a role in his conversation about where we go with this also. But I feel very confident that we have come to good numbers based on the information that we have, and I support this. I think this is important that we move forward at this time.
Thank you, Senator Lilly. Well, members, I just want to say one thing. I'm going to echo this, I'm sure, many, many times, but Senator Dibble helped me set the tone early on. Because of his openness, we both have been caught. And he helped me set the tone for us to have calm, yet passionate, and respectful discussion throughout this whole period of time. And so, Senator Dibble, I want to thank you for that. For the rest of you, thank you very, very much. I mean, this has truly been a very open conversations that we've had. We've kept our minds open. We've listened to each other. And I for that, I thank you. And I thank the staff, all of our staffs that have put up with late nights, our great testifiers, and the people that have come to listen and watch this committee do its work. So with that, Senator Daley.
I would like to just throw in my thank you to all the workers in the state of Minnesota. They may see this in a way that is perceived to be in a way that it's not intended. And so I just sincerely, as a commander of military troops, I know how important morale is and esprit de corps. And I've talked to a lot of state workers. I've talked to a lot of teachers, and they feel that they're attacked. They feel they're on the defensive. And I do not feel that this measure, this bill, is an attack on state workers. We are in challenging days, challenging environments, and I just want to say thank you. Thank you for all of the things that you do, all the state workers, all the teachers, all of the folks who do the hard work day in and day out. Thank you. We really appreciate what you do. I move that staff be instructed to prepare a state government omnibus committee bill containing the articles adopted by the committee as amended, and incorporating the appropriations shown on the spreadsheet and making the necessary technical corrections.
As amended?
As amended.
On that motion.
Roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Yes, Senator Wigger, I was going to let you have the last
word. Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank you for the civil discussion. And yes, it's been very emotional. This has been the most controversial target with Wisconsin and some of the collective bargaining issues and everything. There's been a great deal of concern, and Senator Daley, you're correct. They're the public employees, the middle class, they feel they are under attack. They do. They still do after we pass this, and I appreciate your extending gratitude for them, but you can help better sense why we offer some amendments, why we can respectfully disagree as well. And as was pointed out, there'll be continued discussion of this until we adjourn. But I appreciate the spirit that we've been able to have the discussion, and as we ultimately reach a conclusion, it will be done in the democratic process. So I thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator Wigger. On Senator Daley's motion, a roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
On an 8-5 vote, the motion does prevail. Members, I leave you. Excuse me. Oh, Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senator Perry introduce the omnibus bill on behalf of the State Government Innovation and Veterans Committee.
On Senator Daley's motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. I leave you, thank you, and I leave you with good news. We will not be meeting next week. So thank you. With there no further business, this committee is adjourned.